Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Leadership Mentality. Jacob Johnson, 24 years of combination experience, Assistant Chief with Pearland Fire Department in Southeast Texas. It's been said that you don't need rank to lead, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. You can be a leader when it comes to any profession. The difference is matching words with actions, being directly intentional, having the humility to let others know your faults, weaknesses, working to improve on them, and most of all, being truly genuine with yourself. I literally was at a loss for words when talking to Chief Johnson during this interview. I implore all and any of you who listen to this episode to share this with your friends, colleagues, and coworkers. Have roundtable discussions, smoke a stogie in the back of your bay, but do yourself a favor and listen to the words that Jacob speaks. No script, no rehearsal, just words from the heart from a man that truly wants to help his organization for the better. I want to give Chief Johnson his flowers, along with many other chiefs, company officers, and firefighters that I have had the pleasure of talking to since I started this podcast. You all are making a difference, and don't ever forget that. With that, I present Mr. Jacob Johnson.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jacob Johnson. And so I guess you want to know how I got into the fire department. And for me, it's a pretty interesting story. As a kid growing up, I always threw a fit every time that my mom would pass by a firehouse. I needed to stop and go see the firefighters and go see the trucks and walk through the station. And that just kind of stuck with me as a kid. There was no other firemen in my family. I'm first generation. But something just since I was little, since as far back as I can remember, 4 years old, I had a desire to walk through a firehouse. When I got into school, I started playing football. And when I got into high school, I started showing animals, and I got into FFA. And we did a photo shoot at the local firehouse on a 1978 open cab LaFrance. And that was the day that I found out that I could actually join the Katy Volunteer Fire Department. And so I came home that night with an application. I got my parents to endorse it. I turned in my report card, and the rest is history. So 24 years later, here I am sitting in a great fire department in Southeast Texas, Pearland Fire Department, and sitting as the assistant chief. Started as a pipeman, and I worked my way up all through the ranks. So I've hit every rank on the way up, which has been fantastic for my growth and my career. And lots and lots of great memories and lots of challenges that have helped shape me in my career. And I still have several years left, and I'm looking forward to that and the challenges that come in the future.
Okay. All right. With what you just said, for those that don't know, including myself, can you tell the listeners about Pearland Fire Department? How many stations, amount of personnel, things of that nature?
Sure. So we have six firehouses right now. We cover about 72 square miles, about 160,000 people. We are building Firehouse 7. We start breaking ground on that this year, this fiscal year. Then Firehouse, our eighth firehouse will be right after that. Our ninth firehouse will be right after that. So that's all in the bucket. We border the south side of Houston. So we share city limit lines with them. We have 180 personnel within the fire department. We have 150 assigned to operations. That's in conjunction with a handful of part-timers that we still have left, about eight or nine part-timers. Our staffing is four-man minimums on all heavy apparatus. We have true truck company operations. We have engine company operations. And we do run transport ambulances. We're sitting around 15,000 calls a year, about 120 working fires a year. We average just over 300 fires a year. You know, that's everything from a trash can to, you know, a warehouse. So we do see quite a bit of fire duty, and we do make a lot of EMS runs and pin-ins and accidents, as we have a major freeway that cuts right through the middle of the city called 288. So that goes from downtown Houston all the way to the coast. We sit about, as the crow flies, 32 miles from the Gulf of Mexico. So when Hurricane Beryl ripped through us in July, We took a lot of damage from that, and we had upwards of 98 to 100 mile an hour winds right here in the city. So we see a little bit of everything around here. Our fire department started in 1946. That's when the volunteers started. I have dug into our history, and I found where we had a bucket brigade all the way back to 1900 and the hurricane of 1900 that devastated Galveston and everybody south of us. And our paid department, we went career in 2007, and I was one of the first 18 full-timers that the city ever hired. And so our fire department's pretty young. You know, we're 17 years old, and we've gone from 18 employees to 180, from two firehouses to, you know, soon to be seven. So lots of growth, lots of support from the city, and a lot of growth to come in the future. So looking forward to it.
It's awesome. It's awesome. You're definitely growing for sure. Six,
Oh, yeah.
seven, and eight right behind it.
Yes, sir.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Okay, so I'm gonna rewind a little bit. So you've always had that sensation of love for the fire department. What was it like when you joined your first volunteer station?
You know, it's funny because I walked in and I guess I expected a whole lot more. I guess I expected to walk in and just tones popping off left and right, going to fires and all this. And what I quickly found out was I walked into a family, and that hit me hard, as a young man, walking into a firehouse and everyone saying, "Welcome to the fire department. Welcome." I mean, I can't tell how many times I heard the age-old saying, "Welcome to the greatest department. Welcome to the greatest job in the world. Welcome to the most satisfying a job that you'll have in your career." And then immediately, they handed me a set of gear, and they handed me a helmet and gave me a senior man, and we started training immediately. It was June 9th of 2000. And that was a Thursday, and Katy Volunteer Fire Department trained on Thursday nights, and that night we did search and rescue training because that's what was on the docket. And so I got my first taste of it. And by the end of it, I was exhausted, full of sweat. You know, it's Texas and it's June. And I got home and my parents were like, "What do you think? How'd you like it?" And I said, "I absolutely love it." I said, this is everything I always thought it would be, when all those times you would stop and let me walk through a firehouse." And little did I know, that was nothing compared to what the next 24 years were going to be. But that first night, I could tell, like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. There was no question about it. From the moment I walked through the doors and met David Helms and Mike Lane and Kevin Wilkinson, to the time to the last time that I saw those gentlemen before I left Katy and came to Pearland. So it truly set the tone for my career, and it truly showed me that you can fall in love with something the very first second, and do it for the rest of your life and be 100% satisfied.
So as you transitioned from Katy to Pearland, I know you said at one point Pearland was like a volunteer combination system, and then they went full time. So at what point did you decide in your career, like, I'm ready to do this and I want to do this career full time?
Sure, that was automatic. So that, you know, when I joined, I was a junior in high school. And as soon as I hit my senior year, I went to EMT school, and I graduated in May, and in August I started fire school. So it was automatic for me. And so when I was 19 years old, I was certified and had a job at Katy, working for Katy, because they had full-time EMS, part-time firefighters that would cover the day shift. So we call it duty crew or day crew. So I immediately started working for Katy Fire Department, in all capacities. I started working for West I-10 Fire Department, Cy-Fair Fire Department, riding the ambulance, riding the fire trucks, doing whatever I could to get involved in the job. And I was on shift at Katy, and Alan Williams, who still volunteers for Pattison Fire Department, is still involved heavily in the Katy area as a construction business. He came up to the firehouse and he goes, "Hey, what are you doing?" I said, "Oh, I'm working out." I said, "I'm getting in shape. I'm going to go test for Houston and Conroe and a couple of other departments." He goes, I told him, I said, "I love Katy, but I want something bigger and I want something busier. I want something that makes more fires, obviously. You know, and I made a lot of fires at Cy Fair, which they still make a ton of fire, but they were part time, and I wanted to move to another career department and still keep Sci-Fair on the side. And he told me, he goes, "Hey, have you ever been to Pearland, Texas?" And I said, "No." He goes, "Have you been to Hobby Airport?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, when you exit the Beltway, instead of going left, go right. You'll find Pearland." He goes, "They're starting a fire department." And at this point in time, Alan Williams was the fire chief for Willow Fork, which neighbored Katy. And I said, "Okay." So the next time, which happened to be a couple of weeks later, I was dropping my wife off at Hobby to go back home to New Orleans, and I went right when I dropped her off, and I found Pearland. And I said, "Well, this, it looked like a smaller community. I didn't really understand, right? I'm going. I, granted, this is 2007, so I'm having to
Right.
print MapQuest. I don't have Waze or any of that other stuff, so I'm following MapQuest, and I'm like, man, this is a pretty small town. Like, I don't know what Alan's talking about, And so I called Alan on the way home. I say call him. It was the old Nextel, so I just had to beep him. And so I said, "Hey, man," I said, "tell me some more about the city, because I just drove through it and it's pretty small." He's like, "No, you drove north south." I said, "Yeah." He goes, "You drive east west." He said, "It's about 18 miles long." He said, "It's a huge city." And he said, "And they're starting a fire department. And if I starting a career department," he goes, "and if I were you, I'd jump in it." So I took his advice and I did. And 17 years later, it's probably the best advice I ever took in my career, because I get to build a fire department and I get to be a part of it. And when I walk away one day, I can truly say I was a part of building that, and so that's how I started here, and that's what made me transition, was a bigger city, a busier city, which we were busier from the get. My very first morning on shift, we started October 1st. We had a 2-week rookie academy. October 12th, at 6:04 in the morning, we started shift at 6. We made an apartment fire very first day. And then we made a house fire that evening. So I was like, okay, this is what I signed up for. Not every shift was like that, obviously, but from the start, I was like, this is where I want to be. This is home. And so I resigned from Katy and started in Pearland and stayed at the other part-time gigs where I was, and worked my career, that way until I got to the office where I am today.
I find it so remarkable and awesome how, when it's something you truly love, you remember the date, the time, and what it was just like that. So many people have, you can't remember what you did like 3 days ago, but when it comes to what you truly love, it comes automatically. That's awesome. That's awesome. So it's probably safe to say, once joining Pearland, it was everything you thought it would be.
Oh, 100%, 100%. And it's funny that you mentioned that about the dates, because I'm known for that around here. They call me Rain Man, and they call me the historian, because I remember everything. I can tell you the day, the time of everything. I remember every member who's passed away. I remember every member that when they joined. Like, let's take Matt McCarthy and Diego Lopez. Matt McCarthy is a firefighter on 4C, and Diego Lopez is the battalion chief on C shift. And they both started July 21st of 2014. So I just remember stuff like that because I'm so ingrained in this job and I love it so much. And I love Pearland Fire Department. And you're exactly right. When you truly make your home your purpose, and when you make your people your purpose, it's very simple, in my opinion, to remember dates and times, because it is our job to pass that on and to keep that tradition and to keep that knowledge and to keep that history alive. Because let's face it, I'm less than 20 years from being done, and so who's going to pick up the torch per se and keep it going? And I don't know, so I have to share it as much as I can. So hopefully someone's like, "What? I really need to start learning these dates and start paying attention." So that way, when Jacob's not here anymore, I can continue to share that message. So, but yeah, I mean, Pearland is exactly what I wanted it to be. It comes with bumps and bruises and ups and downs, and building a fire department has absolutely not been the easiest thing to do. There's a lot of frustration and stress that comes with it. As some people like to point out around here, I have a lot more gray hair now than I did when I started, and I certainly have a lot more over the last 2 years of being an assistant chief. But the one thing that I can say is what I tell every new hire class is, you will never be able to sit down in a firehouse here in your career and be able to open up a logbook from the 1800s, right? It's just not going to happen. You're not going to be able to open up a logbook from the 1900s. But one day, a rookie will walk through this door and they'll be able to open a logbook from 2007 and 2024, 2013, whatever the year is, right? And what do you want them to see? And what do you want them to read? And I said, and we're going to have a history book, and every person in our fire department is going to have a chapter. And it's your last name on that chapter, just the chapter of Johnson, right? Or the chapter of of Albright or whatever. Do you want that chapter to be 2 pages or 200 pages? Do you want that chapter to be skipped over, or do you want it to be read thoroughly and learned from? And that is your job as a firefighter in the Perry Lane Fire Department, is to fill our history books and to fill your chapter, because you are obligated to pass on everything that you know to the next generation. And it is, you are obligated to keep our history alive, and you're obligated to keep our traditions alive. And the way you do that is by writing a chapter that's never skipped over and read thoroughly, and by making it a chapter that's not 2 pages, but 200 pages. And I think that really sets home, when we have those talks very from the start in their career here, because it really sets the tone for them, I think, and sets them in the right mindset that we need to be an elite fire department.
When it comes to, and this is always like the million dollar question, and I mean, I'm sure if somebody had the answer, they'd be rich by now, but cultivating that type of culture for a department that, let's just say, didn't really have it, or it was there, but you had to dig to find it. How would someone go about trying to do that for their department now?
Well, I think you need to find your purpose, right, as an individual. And I think that that drives a lot of your actions and your thoughts and your mindset, right? And so for me, my purpose is my people. I heavily invest in them. And so if I invest in my people, how do I keep them invested in the job? How do I keep them in love with the Perry Lane Fire Department? And it's, I have to be able to, how do I say this? I have to be able to shape their purpose to a way that they understand it. And, you know, there's some things that I think you can establish as a command staff, as the fire chief, and say, you know, we are going to be an elite fire department because no one is going to train harder than us. No one's going to train more than us. No one is going to be more prepared than us. And you can establish that mindset, but how do I convey that mindset out to the next group, right? And so for some people, they may need a pat on the back every day, you know, and that's not saying they're soft. That's not saying it's wrong. It's just some people have to have that validation, right, that they're doing a good job, and it keeps them motivated, and they're going to continue, right? And so if you recognize those people, then it's okay. You go up to them every now and then. I'm not saying every day, but every now and then you go up to them and say, hey, man, I really appreciate all your effort. You know, keep to the mindset. Keep remembering that we're an elite fire department. Keep doing what you're doing for me. But yes, sir, got you. Some people, they need a little bit more stern, right? Like, hey, we will be this, and you will train, and this is how you're going to train, and this is the, and these are the expectations. The other thing is I go back to what David Rhodes said in his first keynote for FDIC. He said, I will be unapologetically for the search. I will be unapologetically for interior operations. I will be unapologetic for the research that makes our job better, right? Keeps firemen aggressive, keeps us smart, right? Because if we're aggressive and we're smart, then we're safe, right? And so when I heard that, man, when I heard him say, I will stand in my own shoes, right? It really resonated with me. And the way I can say that is, I want the Perry Lane Fire Department to be unapologetic in their leadership. I want them to be unapologetic in their expectations, unapologetic in their accountability, and unapologetic in their mentorship. And when you set those tones and you set those expectations and you hold people accountable to them, I think your culture builds within. With that, I think what we do a great job of here is outlining expectations through strategy and tactics. And so we have, like I said, our truck company operations book and our engine company operations book. We have deployment models, right? So first in engine is stretching, second in engine's catching a plug, first in truck is splitting high low, and they're doing search the floor above and the floor below, or they're going to the roof and venting. The first ambulance on scene, they're doing all of our outside vent work, and they're softening the building. And with each position on each rig, we have tool assignments that they must grab, and we have what they need to do. And so there's very little communication needed on a fire ground. The chiefs don't have to micromanage the fire ground because we have it laid out, we train on it, and we have the expectation set that this is the culture of the Pearland Fire Department. And this is what makes us elite, and this is what sets us apart, right? And when I say that, a lot of the time I get like, holy smokes, man, like your ambulance guys are just not stretcher fetchers. Like, no, man, like, they have gear, they have air packs, they have hooks, they have cans, they have flashlights, they have everything they need on that ambulance to be a firefighter. That is our job. We have to take care of the fire. Like, I understand EMS calls happen. I understand that we have to take care of those. But at the end of the day, an ambulance is more than likely to be first on scene of a house fire coming back from the hospital than a pumper. So I want them to be able to work. So if you can throw on gear and you can go make a grab, go make a grab. If you can at least start forcing doors and softening the building and doing all of our outside vent work, then it just makes the engine job a whole lot easier. It makes search a whole lot easier. So when you're able to communicate and set those expectations in writing, that's what builds your culture. Outside of that, the command staff of this fire department, we still run calls, we still run make fires, we still go out to the training ground and train with crews. We are heavily involved in the operations of this fire department, so that way we show our expectation and we make sure that everybody else meets it.
That was beautiful. Damn it, man. That was beautiful, Chief. I mean, that
Thank you.
was very, very, very well spoken. So, and this question goes perfect with what you said. And this is a personal question, but what was it or who was it that formed that notion that you have right now with you being an assistant chief when it comes to how you treat the job and the men and women of your organization?
That came from our very first meeting as a career department in the Pearland Fire Department. And Jack Colbath was our first fire chief. And Jack Colbath was an older gentleman. Matter of fact, he had turned 60 the year that we started. So he just turned 77 this past October 8th. And he started his career in Jersey. And he piped over in Jersey, and then he moved over to Washington with the Coast Guard and got a job with Washington and worked through the ranks there to fire chief, then came down to Pearland. And we sat up in our meeting, our first ever meeting as a career department, and Jack Colbath put it real simple. He said, "Men," he said, "there's only 18 of you, and there's only 30 volunteers left." And he said, "The world of the Pearland Fire Department is on your shoulders. All 18 of you. We must stand together. We must support each other. We must take care of each other. And we must understand that the success or failure of the Pearland Fire Department is on us. And if we cannot come together and understand that we have to set the tone and we have to set the mindset and we have to be the type of fire department we want to grow, then we will never be successful. And so I ask you now, are you ready?" And I'll never forget this. He said, "Are you ready to make a difference on the job?" He didn't say the fire department. He didn't say the fire service. He didn't say Pearland. He said, "Are you ready to make a difference on the job?" And we said, "Yes, sir." He goes, "Then it starts today." He goes, "You take care of each other. You take care of the city. You take care of the citizens. I will take care of you at City Hall, and you go build a fire department." And he walked out of the room. And so from that moment, 18 of us, right, got that message. So then what do you think happened, man? Every time we hired, we passed on that same message, right? And so now today, 17 years later, three fire chiefs later, right, I still go PT with the new hires. I run one or two of their mornings. I tell the cadre, I say, "I will work out and I will lead the PT for one or two mornings. Y'all decide, just give me one or two days." I go with every new hire class. I work out with them, and then I give them a very simple speech. I tell them, I said, "Look, stand right here and look at that neighborhood." I said, "Pick out a rooftop. It doesn't matter." I said, "Right now, there's a mom wrapped up in a robe, drinking her coffee, with a baby watching Mickey Mouse Club, with other kids getting ready for school. And that mom has expectations of you and of this fire department. The expectations that we will come save them, we will come get them. Those kids that are going to school have expectations that they will come home to their toys and they will come home to their mom and their siblings and they will eat dinner. The husband that's driving down the road right here in his truck or his car right? Or that mom who's going to work have expectations that they will come home to their house and they will eat dinner with their family because the Pearland Fire Department will ensure that. And I said, and that is your job. And if you are not ready to commit to that style of effort and dedication and commitment to the citizens of Pearland, then you're not welcome in this fire department. We have a hard job and we have a great job, but it is our job to meet the expectations of these citizens every day. Regardless of what we do, regardless of what we say, regardless of what happens in the firehouse or our personal life, the citizens don't care. They only care about what we're going to do for them and how we're going to save them and are we going to meet their expectations. And then I end it and I tell them, I said, look, you're going to hear throughout your career that this is the greatest job in the world. And what I ask you to do is define that. And I don't want you to define it by, because I only work 10 days a month. I don't want you to define it by your paycheck. I don't want you to define it by shift work. I don't want you to define it in a generalistic term of, I get to help people. I want you to define it like I do. And the reason we have the greatest job in the world is because we have the greatest challenge every day to come in and set the expectations and meet the expectations of the citizens of Pearland. That is why it's the greatest job. It is a brand new challenge every day you open your eyes and you get to work hard and be successful and set the tone for the day and meet the expectations. That's why we have the greatest job in the world. And then I ask them if they have any questions. They say no. And I said, well, then go shower up and get ready for your day. And then they take off to the cadre and they start their training. And that whole speech comes from Jack Colbath 17 years ago and him setting the tone and setting our mindsets and motivating us and making us understand that everything is bigger than us, right? And we have to dive in and we have to take care of each other and we have to make sure that we take care of the citizens. And so I think when we're able to do little things like this, man, and you're able to, you know, I know I've only been assistant chief for 2 years, but I don't want to ever hear another chief or assistant chief say, I don't have time to talk to the people. I don't have time to go train. I don't have time for this because I'm making it happen. My fire chief makes it happen. I've seen that my fire chief in the burn building more than me, you know, and we're doing that to help set the tone and to make sure that they understand it is all of our jobs from number one to number 180 to meet the expectations of these citizens. And we set the tone day one of the new hire class, just like was done with us 17 years ago.
Man, I don't really have anything to say on that. I mean, I'm going to use the word beautiful because there seems to be that disconnect, not in all organizations, but I would say in a decent number where when you get to a certain rank, I understand fire chief and then anything below, you know, any part of his administration, depending on the size of your department. I mean, I get it. Depending on the size can make a difference. But the fact that if you are a chief officer and you still remember what it's like to being the boots on the ground, you're still able to every once in a while, not every day, but every once in a while, pop up for you know, you show up at your training facility and you partake. I think personally that goes a very long way for the firefighters of your organization to see that.
Absolutely. I agree. And I think that it's something I wish I would have seen more when I was on the streets, you know. And you're right, we can't forget where we come from. It's our job to be able to communicate effectively to decision makers of the city the needs of our firefighters. And we can't do that if we just stay in this 9 by 9 office all day. You know, we have to get out and see the needs, and that's why we do firehouse visits every 6 months. Me and the other assistant chief, Chief Burt and Chief Taylor, we go around and we eat breakfast or we eat lunch with the crew and we talk to them for about 2 hours. We give them updates, right? We let them know what's going on in the city, what's going on in the fire department. Then we ask them questions, or they're allowed to ask any question they want of us. And we're able to have that open communication. And we learn a lot in those meetings. And when we take a lot of notes that we bring back and we can discuss right here in the command staff and be able to help make decisions that push forward. Right, this fire department. And a lot of the stuff that we do comes from our members. We had a member that wanted to have belt buckles added to the uniform portal. So I told him, I said, okay, Then it's your project. Go design it. Go get three quotes. Let me see if we can afford it. Well, we could. We bought them. So if you're an officer, you get a gold belt buckle. If you're a driver or a firefighter, you get a silver belt buckle. We had another firefighter that came and said, "Hey, I want to do some station pride stuff. I want to get some challenge coins with each station logo on it, and give them to the captains and have set a criteria of what it takes to earn a coin." I said, "Okay, then it's your project. Go design it. Give me three quotes. Let me see what we can do. We can afford it. We bought them, right? These jackets, these puffy coats, and the chore coats that we have, member driven, right? And so we find these things out because we go and we sit at the firehouse tables in the firehouse. And when we get ideas like that, then if we can support it, then we absolutely support it. There's no reason not to support it. And so then we're able to become, honestly, a member driven fire department without having to really say, "I hope you guys understand we're member driven," because they can see it, you know, because we tell them like, "Hey, these challenge coins are hitting the firehouses. This was the idea of firefighter so-and-so. He or she designed them, you know, and when you see them, thank them for all their hard work," right? "Hey, these buckles are on the portal. This was the idea of firefighter so-and-so. They designed them through a committee. We supported it. You know, please order one if you want to wear one." You don't even have to wear it. I don't wear it. It's sitting right there on my shelf, right? But I'm proud of it. So, you know, there's things like that that we constantly put out that you can see, right, without having to beat your chest and brag that, you know, we make a lot of decisions as the command staff, but we are a member-driven fire department.
One thing you mentioned earlier, which hit, you know, resounded with me pretty hard, was the fact that you mentioned the expectations of joining Pearl Ann. And if the individual coming on can't meet that, then maybe this isn't the place for you. In a time where fire departments across the nation are seeing less and less applicants coming in, you know, you have those parts of You have certain departments that, whether they meet that criteria or not, it's like, hey, if you're living and breathing, we'll put you on the truck. But that doesn't. So what I'm saying is, you guys have a standard and you follow that standard.
Right, exactly. We do. And we have an agreement as a command staff that we will not lower our standard, because when you lower your standard, then the citizens suffer. Your good firefighters suffer. Your good officers suffer, right? Now, that's not to say that we just look at you and we say, "Oh, you're not going to meet our standard. We don't give you a shot." We're going to give you a shot, but our phase testing is very, very stringent. Our medical director is probably one of the most aggressive medical directors that I've had in my career. And she believes in whole blood, and she believes in aggressive techniques. And we have ultrasound. We have anything and everything you could imagine we have in the back of our ambulances, short of an OR. And she puts all of that in protocol and supports all of it. And so throughout our phase training, if you do not meet our standards, you will not work here, right? And it's sad, but yes, we've released a few probies because they haven't met the standard, right? And the one thing that I've noticed in the few times that we've had to have those conversations with those probies, all of them, Danny, all of them have said, "This is on me. Like, I had everything I needed, and I started from, you know, behind the ball, or I didn't study enough, or I didn't take it serious enough." Or one of them said, "I didn't realize Pearland was this aggressive. I didn't realize that Pearland was this strategic. I didn't realize that Pearland was this involved on the fire ground and had these type of expectations." And so some of them have resigned, right, and gone back to their other fire departments where they think it's easier. And then some of them have truly not met the standard, and we've had to have some very hard talks that, you know, ended in their resignation. And, you know, I think that that sets a tone for the membership as well, to say, like, we are not going to just hire anybody and let you handle the problem. We're going to handle the problem ourselves as a team, as a family, as a fire department. If you come to us and you tell us, "Chief, I've put everything into this kid. They're not meeting the standard, and I have it all documented in my binder." They get a thick binder, and it has each and every skill, and it has double signatures, and has everything that has to be verified. And if you're telling me that you filled it out and you've done everything and you've gone through two FTOs to verify the deficiencies in your skills, we support you 100%. When he will not, or she will not work here anymore. And yeah, it's hard. And yes, When Firehouse 7 opens, that's 24 bodies that we're going to have to hire. But I know that we will not just hire anybody. And I know that we will not just hire heartbeats, because the citizens deserve more than that. But more importantly, our members deserve more than that, because they shouldn't have to come to work and have to put up with that every day either.
That's facts. Okay. With that being said, my first official question, you mentioned the word already. What does aggressive mean to you personally?
Aggressive to me I have a different definition. Does it mean busting through the door and pushing water right down the throat of the dragon? Yes, absolutely. But I want you to be aggressive in your leadership. I want you to be aggressive in your study. I want you to be aggressive in your knowledge. I want you to be aggressive in your strategy and your tactics. And so when I say be aggressive in your study, I want you to go to bed every night and before you close your eyes, read something fire related. Learn something every day before you go to bed, right? Because I know as a fact that you may be busy during the day, but there is about 5 or 10 minutes after you put your head down on your pillow that your eyes are still open and you're chilling. So just read something fire related, right? When I say be aggressive in your knowledge is learn it, do it, perform it, show it, pass it on, teach it, be able to share it. I mean, there's a lot there that I want you to understand. If you take all of your knowledge and you hold it within, you're not being aggressive with it. You're being selfish. And we cannot be selfish. We have to be aggressive, and we have to aggressively pass on our knowledge. When we're on the fire ground, we're going to be aggressive in the fact that we're going to move with purpose. We're going to follow our deployment models. We're going to follow our writing assignments. We will set the standard for search and rescue and for putting water on the fire and for doing our stretches perfect every time, right? And we will be aggressively smart, right? Is there always an opportunity to save someone? I believe so. Is there always an opportunity to search? I believe so. But we have to be smart. Smart in that approach, and we have to be able to evaluate that approach, and we have to make aggressively smart decisions, right? That lead to the bigger benefit, right? And so we know that the bigger benefit is life safety and putting the fire out. So we will search where we can search, when we can search, and we will put water on the fire first, right? And we will get that done together because of the way we have it set out. Engine company is worried about the stretch and putting water on the fire. The truck company is splitting high, low, and they're doing the search, right? And they will work together in coordination, and we will be aggressive in the flow of our fire scenes. If you expect to come to a fire scene and have it micromanaged by the battalion chief, your fire scenes are more than likely going to go very disorganized, and you won't be aggressive even though you think you are. And so my definition in totality for all of that is love the job. Know the job, have passion in your purpose, and be willing to push yourself to the absolute limits that you never thought were possible.
Fantastic. Okay. I'm not sure the budget of training for Pearland, but realistic training on a I quote it as realistic training on a small budget, but what does Pearland do to try to bring realistic training for their members?
Sure. So our training budget is, without getting to the number of it, is the largest in Southeast Texas. So what we do is we budget. We send probably 10 to 12 people to FDIC every year. We send people to Firehouse Expo, which is now Fire Fusion. We send people to FDTN all the time. We send people anywhere and everywhere they want to go, right? Outside of that, we have a fantastic training ground here. We have a fire facilities tower, a 5-story tower, and we have a 2-story concrete burn building. We have an extrication area. We have a ventilation garden. We have a forced entry garden. We are able to do multiple realistic scenarios, right? And so we do night burns, we do day burns, and we have a monthly calendar. Right, of training. And if you excuse me, I will grab a binder just so you can see it.
Okay.
And so every month, get these on here, right? Every month, each firehouse gets one of these, and it's a binder, okay? And it comes in a three-ring binder, but inside of it has everything you need, right? So it has our monthly schedule, and it's laid out week for week what we're training on. So, let's see, right here, let's see. So on October, is this October? Yeah, on October 1st and 3rd, it's going to be standpipe operations with equipment. Two companies and their medic units come to admin. Week two, October 7th, 9th, and 11th, it's company level training with the LODD report and whatever the company officer decides to train on. October 14th, 16th, 18th, it's EMS resuscitation. Two companies and their medics come to admin, and then it has all everybody who's teaching. Then 21st, 23rd, 25th, this week is company level training, officer determined. And then next week is a complex pumping scenarios where we're going to use our standpipe prop and be able to go through different types of pumping scenarios. And then for busy days, right, and or on weekends, we have our quick drill book that goes in there. And so then it lists out all different types of quick drills that you can do. So this one is size up and tactics, tabletop. This one is a quick drill on a mayday, which is all tabletop, right? Quick drill on training documentation and just how to document it all in ESO. Then there's a quick drill on masking up at the door, right? A quick drill on crib and bunk bed searches and how to accomplish those. Quick drill on victim survival from firefighter rescue survey, right? And learning how to look at all the numbers and what they mean. Quick drills on wind-driven fires. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. And then each binder also has LODD report to review, and sometimes a company officer will sign the rookie to write a report on it. And so we do that every month. We bring in big name people every quarter. So we have Ben Martin coming in November. We had Dave McGrail come in August. We had Scott Thompson come in May. We had Laskin Salka come in February. Next February, we have Starnes and his crew coming in. I mean, and then we're sending people to FDIC. We're sending people to Orlando Fire Conference. I mean, we send people to Joey D. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I mean, so yeah, we have that. And then we have phase two of our training field is going in the CIP to be built over the next 5 years. And that's going to be 60 acres. Or I'm sorry, 38 acres. 38 more acres of just firehouses and training props and different scenarios and water rescue stuff and everything that we need to truly be a regional training ground, but also provide exactly what our membership needs.
Fantastic. Okay. All right. The topic of leadership, whether you're a chief officer or company officer, in your opinion, what does the definition of leader or leadership look like to you? What should that person want to possess if they want to become that?
They need to possess the ability to be humble. They need to possess the ability to be consistent. They need to possess the ability to invest in their people. And I understand that not everybody's a people person. I understand that, and I just happen to be one. But you cannot lead from a chair. And you have to be able to talk to people and communicate to people, and you have to be able to communicate to people in a way that they understand it. And the only way that you can do that is to invest in your people and get to know them. You have to have the ability to admit mistakes and be vulnerable. You have to have the ability to read and learn and pass on knowledge and communicate effectively. And if you can accomplish all of that, I think you're a great leader. And I think that's the definition of a leader. Now, some, in my opinion, will define it as that's the guy that I would go to hell with a water pistol, you know? And that's fine. There's people out there that he's a great leader because he's an amazing firefighter, or she's an amazing firefighter. Yep, I get it. But when you look at the statistics and you truly start breaking down the numbers, and you start pulling data on it, there's only about 13% of our job that we do on the fire ground, right? Which leaves 87% to what? A couple of EMS runs, and then over 84% of our job is in the firehouse. And so I'm looking for leaders who can take care of that 84% and still be great at the other 16%, right? I want great firefighters in my fire department, but I want amazing leaders who can build future leaders, who can build crew continuity, who can provide consistent results, who can be consistent leaders for years. So that way we're able to think high level here at the command staff and push the fire department in a way that it needs to be pushed. And grow the fire department the way that it needs to grow, because we're not having to get involved, or the BCs are not having to get involved into the weeds to fix low level issues, because we're worried about 16% of the job instead of 84.
Okay. All right. You kind of hit on this a little bit, but communication amongst the rank and file. It's my opinion that the most successful organizations, whether you're career, volunteer, part-time combination, to get that high level of achievement that the chief officer hopefully is striving for their organization, communication is paramount. You know as well as I do, the fire service, if you leave room for interpretation, firefighters are going to definitely take it up.
Yeah, they will.
So, what's your take on which you've hit it, but your take on officers or chief officers that, and I understand there are certain things per HR, HIPAA, things like that, personnel, we don't divulge information. I understand that.
Sure.
But as far as the day-to-day operations, to be, there are still chief officers out there who will hold what they would deem as secrets, but withhold information that can benefit the department and will let the rumors fly just to cause turmoil, which I don't get why you would want that within your organization, but there are some out there. So what's your take on the communication?
It is paramount. You're exactly right. And you're also exactly right, because I was a firefighter that would interpret anything the way I wanted it to if it wasn't told to me, right? And I say that not as if I was a bad person, but that's because I was a firefighter and that's what we do. To me, if you have a chief that's withholding information, or like what me and Chief Taylor and Chief Burt like to call it, like Chief Taylor's a huge movie buff. I'm not that much, but I guess there's this thing about Lord of the Rings where there's like this gremlin. It's like, that's my ring.
Yes.
Okay, so that's what we talk about a lot, is that there's officers out there that want to, that's my ring, right? And if that's you, then I think you need to look at yourself, and because you're not a leader and you're actually weak. And I know that's very blunt and it's very mean, but that's the truth, right? If we cannot be transparent and share information, you're only going to hurt your fire department. You're not helping them. If you convey the information wrong, that's going to hurt the fire department, even if you are very transparent. But if you put it out there in a way that firefighters can take it negatively, or if you just tell a very vague story of it and they can take that and run with it, they're going to, right? And that doesn't mean that you have bad people in your organization. That's just what firefighters do, man. I can sit here and I can tell you right now, Danny, I was written up by Chief Albright, because all I did was drink my coffee out of the left side of the cup. And then the next thing is, you're going to sit and there, where I'm going to be in this recliner, you're going to be in this recliner, and then you're going to talk to Joe in this recliner, say, did you hear that Jacob got terminated over drinking coffee out of the top side of the cup and not the left side of the cup? And you're going to tell the whole story wrong, because that's what firefighters do. Doesn't mean you're negative, doesn't mean you're trying to cause a trouble. That's just what firefighters do. And so I think what we've always done really well here, was started by the BC office years ago when I was still a lieutenant, is they put out a tour info email every start of the tour, and it's long, but it's, here's what happened on our days off. Here's decisions the command staff made while we were gone. Here's some answers to questions we had last tour. Here's the schedule for our tour for the next 2 days, because we were 4896. Here's what time training is. Here's the rotation of units to the training ground. Boom, 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 boom. And that hits emails by 6:15 every day, first day of the tour, from the BC to operations, and then they copy the command staff. From the command staff is, we're always putting out emails to the department or to the officers. Please pass this down. Here's some information on this, so on and so forth. Once a month, our executive assistant puts together what we call the Siren, and it's basically just a command staff and general operations newsletter, and it gives an update from each and every division of our fire department, and she puts it together and she sends it out to the whole fire department of this is what logistics is doing, this is what fire marshal's doing, this is what code and health are doing, this is what operations had going on. Here's a message from the fire chief. Here's the birthdays for the month. Here's the anniversaries for the month, so on and so forth. And we put that out every month. If someone leaves the organization, we follow it up with an email, and we go one step further. We put out an informational email as to why they left the organization, and it's approved by legal, it's approved by HR,
Wow.
but we put it out there. This individual was asked to leave because of XYZ. Now, it may not have all the details in there because legal, says we can't do it, but the members know. It's not just, oh, the command staff fired another one. It's not like that. It's like, no, here's the mistake that was made. Here's the decision that was made. And as we always remind you, we will protect you until the death, but do not put us in a situation where we cannot defend you. Because if I cannot defend you, I can't. Like, there is just no way around it, right? If you do something, let's say, that actually breaks a law, you put yourself in that situation. I cannot pull you out of that. But I also will not let the membership believe that I'm a terrible chief who just didn't support you. I'm going to have legal approve a message, and we're going to put it out there to the membership. Like, we love this member. They're always welcome here. They made a mistake, and they no longer work in this fire department.
That right there is setting a standard. Yes, because I know very many departments where it's just you don't know what happens, but somebody ends up seeing that this person hasn't been here in several shifts, and then they get to dig in, and then rumor mill goes, hey, this
Oh,
person
yeah.
resigned or let go. And I get
Right.
it. Like you said, a confidentiality, I get it. But to do what you guys do as far as sending an email out to squash any of the rumors, which I think if you can do rumor control, if you can keep that to a minimum, that right there just it to me it makes everything better within your organization, because
Absolutely.
you are going to go, I think every firefighter is going to go through their career where you didn't see something coming, where I thought
Right.
this person, me and this person were in the same class, we would retire out together or be right behind each other. Things
Yep.
are going to happen and it's called life. But the
Yep.
fact that Pearland does that, to me, that's setting a major freaking standard right there.
Absolutely, because Danny, as well as I do, the members that are being asked to resign or choosing to be terminated, they're sending messages to everybody else. They're telling them the command staff didn't have my back. Don't listen to them. Don't trust them. Or here's why I was terminated. It could have been something that was so simple, and that's fine. That's their right to do that. And you know what? If I was in that situation, I don't know what I would do. I would think that because of my knowledge and experience and my growth in my career, that I'd be able to be honest with people and say, hey, I made a mistake. And I would tell them I made a mistake. I don't think I would ever go against the command staff, especially being a part of the command staff now and understanding everything that takes place, right? And the stuff that I never understood that took place when I was on the streets. But for those on the streets, that's going to happen. They're going to send all those messages, and it's our job to control that because it is the benefit of the membership. And so when you can get HR and legal to approve a message, right? And we will never share information that they don't approve, and we have that agreement. It does. It really does help because we have had several members over the last 2.5 years leave the organization. And by sending out messages like that, it has extremely helped and extremely controlled the rumor mill. And it holds the member accountable because if they want to text some stuff that wasn't in that message and they say, no, we heard this and this is what was sent by the fire chief, I love you, brother. I love you, sister, but good luck to
Yes.
you.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I firmly agree. We're all adults. We should all act like adults. And that right there is definitely key. Now, one question. Do you do the same for a member who, let's just say a bigger department was hiring, or this department is paying more, but they were actually a positive contribution to Pearland? Do you give them that email of such and such is resigning for these purposes, but we want to thank them? Because I think that goes a long way too, when you thank them for their service.
No, absolutely. Yeah, we did, right? Because I think the entire world knows that Houston got a huge settlement. And there were some checks thrown around to members that were upwards of $200,000, right, in back pay. And that they got a new command staff, and Chief Davis, right, got promoted to assistant chief, and he put a message out there: if you want your job back, I'll give it to you. If you left in the last 7 years, you can come back and go right back to where you were at the same pay, at the same firehouse, so on and so forth. And we had some members, some full-time members, leave to go back to the city. And that's exactly what we did. Like, they made a decision for their family. This is better for their retirement because they're closer to retirement with the city of Houston than they are with us. So we support them in their decision. We love them. We thank them for their time with the Pearland Fire Department. They met the expectation every day, and we wish them nothing but the luck in the future. Right. And I think it does go a long way. I think the membership gets a little twisted with it, right? Just because they look at it as that member was just using us as a stepping stone until they got their settlement, right? But at the same time, I argue that because if that was the case, they wouldn't have given 100% effort.
Boom.
They wouldn't have met the standard. They wouldn't have gotten off probation. They wouldn't have not used they or they would have used sick time, and they never did. So I think there's an argument each way, but I do think it's our job to thank the good members and to constantly remind people that good people leave too, and they all have their own reasons. But it's our job as the Brotherhood, right, to support them in their decision. It doesn't mean we have to agree with it, but it's their decision. It's not ours, so we can't judge them on that, and we have to support them, and we have to remember that the word brotherhood is an actual action. It's not a word, and that it is not based on shift work. It is 24/7, 365. So don't call me a brother if you're going to turn an eye when I make a decision that's best for my family, because then you're not being one, right? And I think it's pretty simple that way. I get really passionate about that, because I think it's thrown around a lot, and then nobody's there when you truly need a brother or sister. And that's something we need to fix as a service, as a job, is we have to remember that that word is an action, and it's an action that was built long before social media and cell phones and anything ever existed. And it is something that we owe our forefathers on this job, is to be kind to each other and to take care of each other and to be good brothers and sisters to each other, and understand that we cannot just be a good brother or sister on the 24, 48, 48, 96, whatever schedule you're on. It is 24/7, 365 until the day they put dirt on your coffin. You have to be there for each other. And I get very emotional. I get very, very passionate about that, because there's been too many times where people just don't want to be brothers or sisters because they don't want to be bothered, but yet they want to make sure they tell everybody, "I love you, brother." And I get very frustrated with that sometimes, because I don't think it's reciprocated like it should be.
And the PSA, I would like all the listeners to rewind that two, three, four times. Play it throughout your PA speakers at your station because that is 100% facts. Beautiful, Chief.
Thank
Beautiful.
you.
The last question I have for you, I always like to ask the guests, where do you see yourself? Where would you like to see yourself before retirement? Can Chief Jacob Johnson see himself as Fire Chief Jacob Johnson, or does he want to see himself as that?
I don't know. Until 2 years ago, when I had a fire chief look me in the eyes and tell me he believes in me, and tell me that he wants me to be the assistant chief of this fire department. I never had any aspirations. I never had any aspirations to be in a command staff position. I have an associate's degree, and that's it. I have a lot of years under my belt, and I have a lot of scars, and good times. And I thought that I would spend the next 16 years or so in the command car, and just be really good at being a battalion chief. And so when he gave me this opportunity and appointed me to this position, it opened up a whole new world that I was scared to walk down. And it's been tough, the 2 years trying to transition, probably one of the hardest transitions of my life. Very difficult to get into the swing of things and to understand the difference between shift work and working in the office. And so right now, I'm really enjoying the role of assistant chief and trying to be really good at it. And I don't know if fire chief's in my future or not. Chief Burt is probably one of the biggest mentors I've ever had in my life, and he's been on the job for over 40 years, and he's the assistant chief of ops here, and he puts it best. He's like, I really like being an assistant chief and being the puppet master. I really like being able to pull the strings and make things operate that make the fire chief look good when he goes to City Hall. And I'll tell you, like, there's a lot to be said for that. I believe that the only way you succeed as a fire chief is you have to have really good number twos. And so I don't know. I know that I've had a couple members that have told me they want me to be the next fire chief. And I have put some thought into it, but a lot of that Danny's going to decide on my family. I always have two questions, and I had two questions the day he asked me to be the assistant chief was, what if I fail and I need to go talk to my family? And he told me, I won't let you fail. I will help you. You're not going to fail. And I'm very proud of you for saying you need to go talk to your family because you absolutely do. But I feel like when I go to that fire chief role, who's going to make sure I don't fail? Who's going to help me? Right? Because everyone looks up. And I think I need a lot more years here as the assistant chief to truly get an understanding of the decisions that I need to make in the future for my career. I am exactly where I always wanted to be in my life. I am exactly where I always wanted to be in my career, and that is a firefighter. I never had a rank attached to it. I never thought about, oh, I want to be a company officer, I want to be a chief, this or that or the other. I just want to be a firefighter, and I get to do that every day. And it's the biggest blessing because I get to walk into a new challenge every day to meet the expectations of this fire department of these citizens. And so if I get to do that for the next 16 years or so right here in this chair in this old brown office, then I'll be doing all right. And I'll be just happy.
Okay. I wholeheartedly understand that. And what I love about what you said was the fact that you opened up and admitted it's fearful going into a position where, and I'm gonna try to figure out how to say this the correct way. There are fire chiefs out there who are doing the best that they can every day for their members, and then there are some that are not. But I don't like when all the blame gets pointed to the fire chief. Your culture sucks, fire chief. Granted, and I will say this, I'll preface it by saying, yes, leadership starts at the top. Like if the fire chief can set expectation, like this is what we will do, how we will perform, I get it. Like to me, that you need that. But you have some that are doing that, but somewhere within the communication line that's not being sent down to the members, whatever the case may be. I don't like the fact that firefighters sometimes point directly to the fire chief where, all right, something goes wrong, fire chief. Where I look at it as you have more company officers than a fire chief. The company officers set the tone.
That's right.
To me, if a company officer is not establishing that line, showing these expectations, I think yes, the one man can't make all of his company officers have that mentality. And
That's right.
so I love the fact that you openly admit to it, get going to that step is fearful because you hope that you have the backing, the leadership underneath of you because 2024, I believe it's a cutthroat world where if I believe that there are some chiefs out there who want the position of chief and will do anything to get it. And
Correct.
I'm sorry I said it, but I said what I said because everybody has or most everybody has an agenda. They want to get to a certain spot. And some of them, and I always say some of them don't care how they get there.
Right. No,
So
you're right.
I understand that having that backing is huge because if I'm a chief, the chiefs underneath me, I want them to have my support and have my back, where if something falls, it's not like I'm backing up and I'm pointing, this is the guy that's in charge. So
Right.
I get it. But I personally think, Chief, that you will be, whenever you're ready for it, if you decide to do it, you would be a fantastic, fantastic fire chief, because from the get-go, the way that chief that you mentioned that set the tone when he hired the 19 of you to become Perlin, I think that right there planted the seed within you that made you the person that you are today.
I think so, and I appreciate that, Danny. And maybe one day that's a decision I'll have to come across. But to hit on what you said, man, you hit the nail on the head, because if I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times, is company officers are the golden ticket to your fire department. And if you're a company officer and you don't believe that, then I highly advise you take a look at yourself or you step down. You are absolutely the golden ticket to everything that happens, positive or negative, in your fire department. The fire department is on the backs of the company officers, and that should be the position that you feel the most pressure in to perform. And Mike Lane Pops, one of my very first mentors on this job, he set me straight one day. I was complaining and complaining and complaining about a terrible fire chief, and he looked at me and he said, "Jacob," and he never calls me Jacob. He always called me Johnson or Little Boy, or he called me Little Rugrat or something, or Biggin. And he said, "Jacob, how many days a week does that fire chief come in your firehouse and disrupt your flow and control what you do with your crew every day?" I said, "Well, never." I said, "He never gets out of the office. What are you talking about?" He goes, "Then why are you allowing him to affect your mentality of you and your crew?"
Exactly.
He said, "You are the problem, not the fire chief." He said, "You will work for terrible fire chiefs again in your life." He goes, "But if you allow that, someone who never steps foot in your firehouse, to affect the attitude of you and your crew," he said, "you will never be successful." And from that day forward, I went back to work. And I sat my crew down and I said, "It stops now. From today moving forward, we are a family. We love each other and we love our job and we're going to have fun. And we're not going to allow any outside noise to affect us." And which led to me building, when I was a battalion chief over the B shift, a B shift oath and a B shift expectations. And not to separate ourselves from everybody, but to make sure they understood that the outside noise is outside noise and that we will love our job and we will perform our job to the best of our abilities. And that's all due to Pops, man, and making me understand that I was the golden ticket of the fire service, and I was the golden ticket of Pearland, and that I needed to step up for my men and women and make sure that I didn't allow some phantom attitude that never stepped foot in the firehouse affect the firehouse.
Well said. Chief, I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to do this. Before we go, I want to ask you, because I'm sure there's going to be members that are probably going to look. You mentioned stations 7 and 8. Where would an individual go to look at when you guys are getting ready to hire?
You can follow us on social media on Facebook, the Pearland Fire Department Facebook page. You can follow the fire chief. I forget, I think it's Pearland Fire Chief J. Taylor. You can follow me, because if you want, on social media, because I always share all of our stuff. Follow the City of Pearland social media pages, LinkedIn, Facebook, all of it. Go to the City of Pearland website. And we'll always post when we're hiring. We will run a new hire test every January and every June, regardless of positions, because we want to have a running list. So we will be posting for hirings every January and every June. And actually, I'll look at my phone. We just set it. So applications will be starting, I would think, in November, December. We will be testing January 25th of 2025
Okay.
is when we will be testing. So that will be our next test, and then we'll test again in June. If we get a SAFER grant that we applied for, that's 24 people that we're going to have to hire. So if you're interested in the Pearland Fire Department, we'd love to have you. We hire people from all over. One of our members right now lives in Tempe, Arizona. And he flies in to work for the Pearland Fire Department because this is where he wanted to work and his family didn't want to move. We have people who drive 4, 5, 6 hours to come work for us. We've hired people from Arkansas, Memphis, New Jersey, Florida, everywhere that wanted to relocate and come work for us. So we'll take anybody and everybody. You just got to go through the state of Texas and get reciprocity or whatever with your certifications and come join one of the what I think is one of the greatest fire departments in the nation.
So if you're an out of towner, your credentials, you just have to go through Texas to get your
Texas.
stuff to transfer over.
Right.
And would they have to be EMTBs, paramedics, or does it matter?
Yeah, so EMT basic as a minimum. And then if you're a paramedic, we pay you an extra $5,400 a year on top of your salary to be a paramedic and to keep that certification. We provide all of your training. We pay for all of your recertifications of all certs that you have, and we'll send you anywhere you want to go to obtain training. I mean, I pay your uniform is paid head to toe except for your underwear. So we provide hats, socks, jackets, polos, t-shirts. I mean, everything. So it's a one-stop shop for us. We'd love to have you come out and test with us and try to meet the standard and push our fire department forward.
Beautiful. Chief, really, really appreciate it. Love the message. Genuine, truthful, the humility. I love it. I knew I wasn't going to go wrong. I've heard you on my buddy Jake Barnes's podcast, and Jake loves you, talks very highly of you. And when I listened to how you talk, I was like, I need to reach out to this chief. So never fails. I love that I did, and I appreciate that you accepted this invite, sir.
Well, thank you very much. I truly enjoyed doing this stuff. Jake talked very well about you. Jake and I are really good friends, and he was like, "Man, if Danny hits you up, you got to jump on it." I'm sorry it took so many months to get
It's
it done,
fine. It's fine.
but I'm glad that today happened. I woke up excited this morning, and I was rushing my son out the door. I was like, "Come on, man, we got to go because I got to get these meetings done, and I got to get on a podcast." So I really appreciate the invite, Danny, and thank you for giving me the platform, man, to let the light shine on Pearland for a little bit and I hope it's a great episode for you and I hope all the luck to you and your family and everything you have going on down there at your house.
Appreciate it, sir. Thank you very much.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.